We've had the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call us on country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Rachel Harvey. Thanks for joining us. Tens of thousands of anti-government protesters took to the streets of the Thai capital Bangkok today. Demonstrators in Moldova stormed the parliament building on Tuesday, angry at election results they say were fraudulent. Dramatic footage has come to light of a man with his hands in his pockets being shoved to the ground by a police officer during the G20 protests here in London. The man later died of a heart attack. Further back in time, Genoa, Seattle, Nairobi, cities now forever associated with past violent protest. But do you remember what they were protesting about? If protests turn violent, is the argument lost? If you live in a society that enjoys free speech, should you restrict yourself to purely peaceful demonstrations? We'll hear from someone involved in campaigning for change in Zimbabwe, from an environmental activist who threw green custard at a British minister, from a Pakistani lawyer whose protests helped restore the Chief Justice to his job, and from a former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police here in London. We're not talking about the causes themselves, but whether you think it's okay to resort to violence to get your message across.
World, have you say?
You can listen and then call on in. State your opinion and speak and then. Yeah. You don't agree with the people they got, then take your shot and speak to them. Discuss the issues we must. Officials corrupt, the phones are rough. Social, political, spiritual, physical, literal, lyrical, verbally, visual, world participants. That's the difference. Piques my interest. That's the impetus. Couldn't call in, so I posted it. Hoping that someone would notice it. Open and cope with it. My dominion, my opinion. Speak to the world that I'm living in. Very few shows that go this way. You're listening in to World Have You Say.
You are indeed listening to World Have Your Say. Moldovans frustrated at what they see as fraudulent elections. Thais angry with their government. Climate change protesters setting up camp and blocking a main road in London. A man pushed to the ground by police during the G20 demonstrations. He later died. And clashes between police and demonstrators during the NATO summit. Today, we're asking if protests that turn violent undermine the very cause they were supposed to highlight. Is the argument then lost? Anthony Keenan has emailed us. The very act of protest, he says, means conflict is assured. Those that speak out, take a stand, act in solidarity or lash out in frustration, they do so knowingly. And Justin Mann has posted on the blog, violence that makes any point can be expressed through freedom of speech, moot. You can join the conversation, World Have Your Say at bbc.com. And remember, Priya from the World Have Your Say team, she's going to be tweeting throughout the programme. So do get in touch with her if you like. And let's get this conversation going. I'm delighted to say I'm joined in the studio here by Tariq Ghaffour. He's the former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. On the line, we have George Mombio. He's an environmental campaigner. And we also have Jenny Williams. She's joining us from the Liverpool studio. George Mombio, I know that you don't have an awful lot of time to spare, so let's give you the first word. Is there any justification for violence, or does just the message get lost?
Sometimes there is. There are situations, for instance, Nazi occupation is the extreme example, where the only possible political response is a violent one, because no other political response is going to work and free people from liberation. And there are many instances of that around the world, where we saw, for instance, the anti-apartheid campaigns. We remember the peaceful protests. We are slightly less keen to remember the armed wing of the resistance movement. But I think I can understand why there was an armed wing, because there were many years under which it seemed impossible that apartheid could be overthrown by peaceful means. Similarly, with the British occupation of India, we remember Gandhi and the salt marches and the peaceful protests, but there was also an armed wing of the resistance there too. And again, I think I can sympathise with people taking up arms to try to overthrow a military occupation, which is what it was. In situations such as ours in the United Kingdom at the moment, no, I don't believe that violence is the right approach, because there are other means of being heard, generally of being ignored, but at least that there are means of making your point, and some of them are effective. And while those means persist, and while the government has not quite yet closed down all the possible means of protest, though it's doing its best, it's banning protests left, right and centre, then we should use those peaceful means and not resort to violence. It has to be said that we aren't resorting to violence. And The police keep talking up violent protest in this country, but almost all the violence you see, it begins with the police when they attack peaceful protesters by violent means.
Tariq Ghaffour, you were a former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. The G20 protests, of course, in London, they were allowed, but there was violence. Is violence inevitable?
Well, I think I talk from a UK perspective, and it's a fairly kind of narrow perspective. But having said that, with many years of experience, I think we've got to put the whole thing into a wider context. I mean, the reality is that free speech is absolutely valued in UK. We have hundreds and hundreds of protests a year in London, and most of them are very, very peaceful. And actually unarmed police officers working with stewards, with organisers who tell us when the protests take place, they go very, very peacefully. But what we have sadly seen over the last kind of short period, and this thing is very cyclical in many ways. We saw the Olympic torch protests, we then saw the climate camp, now G20, where there are a small group of people who really, really are hell-bent on making trouble. They're highly organised, and frankly, to a certain extent, we ourselves have over the years professionalised ourselves because we collect information and intelligence. And when you look at some of the open source information about how they actually advocate violence, then frankly, you know, how do we deal with that? And that's a real, real dilemma. And I think this small minority actually spoil it for the majority in terms of the objectives of why the protest takes place in the first place.
Well, I mean,
and I refute, I really do, because the notion that police actually go out there, you know, with a mentality, you know, and I was in the police for 30 years, and I know how protests have changed. We've become much, much more professional. And in many ways, when the chaotic situation, as in G20, took place, then there are some serious, serious dilemmas for us.
George Monbiot, I know you wanted to come back in.
Yes, I mean, of course, there is a small minority of people who do want to cause trouble and smash things up and possibly beat people up, but those are very, very few in number. And the trouble is, as we saw at the G20 protests, and we're seeing increasingly in the UK, the police treat everyone as if they are engaged in the same game, and they treat the public hand raised in objection as if it were the public hand raised in attack. And we saw this very clearly, where the police surrounded and hemmed in entirely peaceful protests. In a couple of cases, there were one or two more or less violent protesters among the protesters. In some cases, there were none whatsoever. It was totally peaceful. And then they pushed and pushed and pushed those people until they got an angry response. And it seems to me that the police want that angry response. They want that angry response because that justifies their police budget and the heavy-handed nature of their policing.
George Monbiot, thanks very much indeed. I know you have to leave us now. I want to bring in a few other people here. Jenny Williams is in Liverpool. Umer Mansour joins us from Lahore. And Professor Jonathan Farley is on the line from the United States. Welcome to you all. Jenny Williams, what do you have to say on this?
Well, I think for us as a non-violent movement in Zimbabwe, one of the key objectives of any issue that you take up non-violently, you are out there to provoke some sort of a response. You are out there to make injustices visible, injustices that are curtailing your freedoms of expression
and
assembly.
Just remind us what your organization does. What do you campaign
to do? We are Women of Zimbabwe Arise. We are a civil disobedience movement. We use peaceful protests to hold our government accountable. Now, when you are going to go and make injustices visible, you've got to maintain the moral high ground. How do you do that? Through peaceful means, non-violent means. If you now go over and you start to become violent, the focus will now become on what you have done, who you have harmed, who you have injured, and you will then overshadow your real issue in its purity and the issue that you are wishing to bring to the fore.
Umer Mansour from Lahore, you were involved in those lawyers' protests. Did they stay peaceful?
Yeah, hi there.
Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. The protests in Pakistan regarding this restoration of judiciary movement, in the initial stages, they were violent. And afterwards, they became peaceful. But the point I want to make here is, first we have to see and we have to analyze that who started the violence. The point is that at one side, there is some government machinery going on, like police. And on the other side, there are like some few lawyers who are well-educated and who are fighting for justice and peace. But, you know, the violence starts from the police. They have been starting from the police, but, you know, that's the difference. And what we were doing, that was self-defense. But in the end, it changed, you know, everything changed, and the higher hierarchy of the government intervened, and the protests became peaceful. So basically, the my point is that first we have to see who starts the violence.
So let me just talk about the UK perspective. Mm-hmm. All our training in police, I mean, you've got to remember here, 90% of the police who actually operate in London are unarmed. And all our training around public protests is one about allowing peaceful protests. It's about proportionality. It is about restraint. It is about communication. But inevitably, you know, the only time the riot police come out when there is a section of the protesters who actually cross that line from a peaceful protest into actually, to a certain extent, you know, violate the law by either assaulting police officers or throwing missiles at them, or actually in a physical engaging in a physical confrontation. And the important aspect here is that, you know, the police officer is liable. The individual police officer has to show that they used proportionate force. And if they don't, then there is an independent investigation. There's an independent criminal Crown Prosecution Service that decides whether there's going to be a criminal prosecution. So I think those checks and balances in many ways are counterbalanced. But you will also know that really where there is a protest that goes beyond just peaceful protest, then frankly, tactically, there are certain tactics that have to be used in relation to restraining people. And the fact that the police officers take out their baton is a defensive tactic. It doesn't look very good on television. It actually, to a certain extent, you know, people who want to innocently protest actually back off. But it's some of the troublemakers then come forward. And to a certain extent, the sudden growth of global television makes them actually go well over the top. And that is unexcusable, because the role of the police there, as I said, the majority of the protests here is actually to keep peace, not to actually inflame the situation or themselves engage in violence. And police officers don't come to those protests to actually do that.
Jenny, you go ahead.
Yeah, just on the aspect of keeping the peace, if you call yourself a peace officer, which some police do, they don't call themselves that in Zimbabwe. But in Zimbabwe, what would happen if police come across a woman demonstrating? We are primarily a women's movement, and we will be singing a peaceful song, holding our placards up. Police will jump from their vehicle with batons raised, and to them, laying into us with their baton sticks is the way they keep peace. And so we would want to be able to be clear on how do you keep peace, and then what is our response.
Well, can I
Coming back to the comment earlier as to who starts the violence, I don't think as a protester we should focus on that. It is a defensive position that will get us nowhere. Because if violence is met with violence, very seldom do people say, well, who started it? Because you have now already sullied your hands and you've lessened the issue.
Jenny, thanks very much. Umar Mansour, I think you were trying to come back in there.
Yeah, I was. Actually, the point that Met Police Chief was making, I don't know if I'm right, he's the Met Police Chief.
He's the former Assistant Commissioner for Metropolitan Police, Tariq Ghaffour.
Yeah. What he was trying to say was, he was saying to make the police people innocent. No, the point here is that this offence, if a policeman beats up a protestant, it's the offence committed is not of a strict liability, it's of a vicarious liability, you know. So you have to keep that in your mind. So everybody in charge is also liable for that. But what the police does is basically they are trying to prove their own worth and they have the power. That's what it's normally done in Pakistan. But I have been to UK as well. I have seen protestants over there. I've seen a vast protest over there. But, you know, when you have to make a difference, you have to, you know, show something to fall on the deaf ears, what they say. But the point here is that the reason I was trying to say that who starts the violence, that then there's a difference between protest, violent protest, and self-defense. That what we have to keep in mind. So if I am doing something in self-defense, if I'm throwing back the stone which a policeman has thrown at me, that's not violence, sir. That's self-defense.
Yeah, but having said that, I think, you know, we can get into technical definitions and legal definitions. And I could talk about, you know, why we use particular tactics. But the crucial point, which I think needs to be made in this aspect, is that the whole objective of protest is to actually bring to the attention in a particular cause in a peaceful way.
Yeah,
and
I
frankly, I think, you know, what then happens is the whole debate shifts in terms of blame. And frankly, the original objective of why the protest took place, and that is why we are very pleased in London, because hundreds of protests are very peaceful, are absolutely legitimate, and we actually value that and are very proportionate and restrained.
You're listening to the BBC's World Have Your Say. This is your chance to join the conversation. You were listening there to the voice of Tariq Ghaffour, the former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. And he was in conversation just now with Umar Mansour, a High Court lawyer. Let's try and move away from the precise legalities of these protests. Let's get back to the question, is it ever legitimate to have violence in your protests, or does it just simply undermine your argument? Professor Jonathan Farley has been waiting very patiently. He's an old friend of the programme. He joins us now. He's written widely for The Guardian and The New York Times about the war on terror. Professor Farley, in the United States, what would you like to say on this?
Well, it depends on how you define violence. I'd like to talk about the comments made by Chris Knight,
please
do, professor who was suspended from his job for making comments about hanging bankers.
And Chris Knight will be joining us later on the show, so do bring up what he had to say.
Well, it's important to actually look at his exact comments, but I'd like to say that you might think I'd be against Chris Knight because I myself have gotten dozens of death threats, and actually the hate crimes unit of the Nashville, Tennessee Police Department is looking into those threats right now. But to be perfectly honest, what Chris Knight said was not objectionable. What the university did that suspended him really was. It's important to make to look at exactly what's said. Chris Knight did not say go and hang a particular person. And also, when it comes to...
This was in the context of the G20 protests, wasn't it?
In the context of the recent protests, exactly. And even though there was some what you have to call violence at the protests, people breaking windows and so on, I'm pretty sure that McDonald's can afford to have a few windows broken. Certainly, I wouldn't object to having police make sure that property is not damaged, but let's also not go and classify everyone... put everyone in the same category as the Red Army because they break a McDonald's window or a bank window.
Well, you were just talking about Chris Knight, and Chris Knight does join us now on World Have Your Say. Chris, would you like to respond to that?
I didn't hear the question, I'm afraid. I was just testing for sound, so...
I beg your pardon. Well, yeah. Professor Jonathan Farley was just referring to your comments about it involving the G20 protest and how he felt you were misquoted, misunderstood.
I was, yes.
Professor Farley is on the line. Chris Knight and Professor Farley, talk to each other.
Hello, yes, indeed. I was very seriously, gravely, libelously misquoted, of course.
Yeah, I think you said nothing wrong. I thought that, in fact, the G20 meltdown did you wrong also by basically surrendering to this public misdefinition of what counts as violence.
Yeah.
And not allowing you to join the other people organizing the protests on the platform. And so my aim is to focus on what we actually consider to be violence, because making generic comments about how what something that might happen to bankers in the general as a joke is totally different from saying, let's target a specific person, as I've been specifically targeted, for death. it's absurd.
Well, I mean, I was wearing a placard around my neck outside the Royal Bank of Scotland several weeks before all this, and my employers suspended me, and the placard was saying, "Eat the bankers." And my employers obviously lack a sense of humour. They really do think that Chris Knight, when he's feeling a little bit peckish and near a sandwich stall, instead of eating the sandwich, goes to the nearest banker, gets hold of his leg and starts to munch it. Of course, humour is the antidote to violence. And I'm into humour. Basically, I'm an anthropologist. Having a sense of humour is probably the defining feature of being human. Be able to laugh, be able to smile, be able to get the joke, be able to see through a metaphor an underlying truth, even though on the surface it's obviously, you know, all metaphors are kind of false on the surface. All those are things, those are what makes a person a human as opposed to a computer.
So does a banker's leg go better with curry or sweet and sour sauce?
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's just ridiculous. My employers, like all bosses, all capitalists, they cannot laugh at themselves. It's the same with big men in big men societies. You know, Papua New Guinea and so on, you have the big men with the pomposity and they're claiming that they make the babies. If the women were to laugh, and of course in the sense they should do, the entire edifice would come collapsing down. I'm into laughter, and I'm waiting for the entire edifice of global capitalism to come tumbling down.
I must say, I find this conversation absolutely fascinating. Two grown-up, highly eminent intellectual people actually trying to draw interpretations on what is violence and what is not. Mm. Well, then, just try and put that into context of a police officer, about 17, 18-year-old police officer, or 19, who has to then make an interpretation as to, you know, what one person is doing to and what the other person doing is right and wrong in the context of the law. And that is why I think, you know, we are very lucky here that the interpretation of what right and wrong is done by an independent judiciary, you know, and where there is wrongdoing, there's an independent complaints authority. But what I can't agree with is that you start to draw, well, it's okay to smash the windows of McDonald's or the bankers, or, well, where do you then take it? It's okay to kind of smash the houses of the people who actually own this, the staff who actually work there. Well, where do you draw the line, really?
Chris and Professor Farley, you're both trying to come in. Chris, will you respond first? Professor Farley will come straight to you afterwards.
Unlike Tony Blair, unlike these people, you know, politicians who barge into with huge amounts of violence, tanks, rocket-propelled grenades, phosphorus, you know, bombs in the case of Israelis in Gaza, I and my colleagues always wait for an invitation before going to anyone's house, into their bank, into their country. I do not use violence, okay? That's the fundamental. As soon as you start using, even smashing windows to get into somebody else's property, somehow the message gets lost. But having said that, I mean, if in order, for example, to switch off the lights for a Earth hour, I mean, you know, to sort of, I don't know, somehow get into the building and possibly break a window, I mean, compare with the damage done by capitalism to this planet of ours, I mean, breaking the odd window is small fry. Still, let's hope we don't even have to break a window. In the Velvet Revolution, the most impressive of the Velvet Revolutions across Eastern Europe in 1989 were those which are absolutely silent, not a pane of window smashed. That is chilling. That's what my ideal would be.
We promised we'd bring Professor Farley back in, so we'll do that right now. Professor Farley.
Yes, I was referring to Professor Knight's comments, which clearly don't represent violence, but unfortunately, in the mindset of the public, too often anything gets gets called violence. And then the point I was actually making is that everything that is considered violence is given the same violent response. So I'll never break a window. Actually, I did break a window once by accident, and I paid £50 for it. But I'd never break a window. But someone breaking a McDonald's window, McDonald's can afford it. It shouldn't be treated like it's Osama bin Laden coming to bring down the Twin Towers.
Professor Farley, thanks very much. We'll have more of this after the news.
You heard the news from the BBC. Now it's your turn. Call us on country code 442070 837272. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Rachel Harvey. Today we're discussing whether the argument gets lost when a protest turns violent. At the G20 summit and at the NATO summit, there was sporadic violence during street protests. Did the message get lost in the mayhem? When demonstrations become battlegrounds, is the argument drowned out? Marie posted on the blog, she says even if one person or 100 get violent, that doesn't make it okay for the security forces to beat them or anyone else. Paul in Uganda emailed to say, definitely the end does sometimes justify the means. If that's the only way, some people who think they're higher than mighty will get the point. John in Portland is listening on OPB. Peaceful protests may or may not, he says, get media coverage. However, introduce violence into the mix and the pictures are flashed all over the world. Frederick in Boston, I believe we've distorted the role of protest within society. There's an increasing sentimentality throughout the world that if anyone or group has any discontent, they can take to the streets and make a noise. The question today is, making a noise enough? Is there ever any excuse or justification for violence? Or does that simply undermine your argument? The blog address is worldhaveyoursay.com.
If you don't want to make an international call, text your point to country code 447786206080 and put call me in your message.
Well, here with me in the studio is Tariq Ghaffour. He's the former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. On the line from our Liverpool studio is Jenny Williams. Umer Mansour is with us from Lahore in Pakistan. And Mark joins us on the phone, a serving police officer. Mark, I believe we're using that name, even though you'd prefer us not to use your real name. So Mark is what we're going to call you. And Mark, perhaps you'd like to talk to Tariq Ghaffour, a former Assistant Commissioner. You're a serving police officer. You two chat.
Well, I don't think Mr. Ghaffour said anything I disagree with particularly that I've heard since I've been on the line. I particularly agree with his view on the definitions of violence. I mean, to the ordinary man in the street, it's quite obvious what violence is. And the trouble with saying that you have to take up violence to achieve your aims is that it's always the wrong people who get in the way of the violence. It's always the, whether it's an ordinary police officer at the bottom end of the scale or it's the people having and sitting down to have a Big Mac in McDonald's who get showered with glass when the window gets broken. It's you're not really hitting the corporation, you're hitting ordinary people.
So that's the very thing, isn't it, Tariq Ghaffour? It's undermining the argument.
Well, it is, and to be honest, in many ways, I think, Mark, one thing that we've been over the years trying to understand is kind of the behaviours that take place in a protest, you know, behaviours within police officers, behaviours within the protesters. And often, you know I was many, many years ago in the front line and I was involved in the miners' strikes and various others, that you stood there sometimes taking abuse, being spat at, missiles thrown at you all day long, and you had to stay restrained. Now, I don't think human behaviour can actually hold tolerance like that right across the board. And sometimes, you know, how do we kind of curtail an individual police officer, you know, suddenly reacting to a situation because of the fact that he or she had been standing taking the stick all day long. And I don't think we can legislate for that. And the difference nowadays is that, of course, everything now can either be recorded by a citizen on their mobile phone or recorded and television cameras onto that particular activity and then splashed right across the world.
Mr. Ghaffour will know more than I will. He would have seen the detailed intelligence reports that these the people who go on one protest will be the same people who go on another protest, the same people who go on another protest, with only tenuous links between the causes, deliberately to provoke, to try to provoke aggression or violence, and they will have a quite sophisticated evidence-gathering teams and network themselves. And, of course, we only see one small section of a video of footage when we see, not necessarily talking about what happened recently in London, but we see one small section of it and we can draw, you know, completely erroneous conclusions from that section of footage.
Mark, thanks very much for your call. Interesting points there. We've heard a lot about what is the definition of violence. We've talked a lot about how the police try to control that violence. We've heard from other people who say that the police are sometimes instigators of the violence. I'd like to move this on to whether that violence ever achieves what the protesters were hoping to. Umer Mansour in Lahore, your protest in the end did achieve what it wanted to. You got the Chief Justice back into office.
Yeah, it did. In fact, first of all, I would like to, you know, point something to Mr. Tariq. He said that the police people, they are human beings and they cannot, spitting and, you know, they cannot tolerate that much. But the point here is that when the protestant is coming to a road to make for a protest, obviously he is coming because he is also frustrated. He is sick and tired of, you know, anything like state oppression or something like that. The purpose he's trying to do the protest. So obviously he has gone to the limits. That's why, you know, he comes up and he then try to fight with the police because, you know, the police is representing state over there. So that's the first the point I wanted to make. And then now going to the second thing, I really feel sorry for the McDonald's people. They should not be, you know, their windows shall not be breaked every time.
The innocent bystanders.
Yeah, exactly. Because I've seen that in Pakistan, in Lahore, there was a protest in 2006 against the blasphemy cartoons. The people were very violent. They were destroying every international franchisee, every shop over there. But what I have gathered over on lawyers' protest over that has gone for 2.5 years. So basically, the lack of leadership and the lack of control that results in violence. But, you know, when the violence is peaceful and you just are determined to do what you want to do and you are just going for that. But we did it for like 2.5 years, and finally we were able to restore our Chief Justice, and finally we were able to restore the rule of law in Pakistan. But we have gone through very thin as well. In the beginning, it was very violent. I myself has, picked some stones on my head, and, you know, the police were like, they were like throwing the tear shells directly on the human beings. On the tear shell, Mr. Tariq must know that. On the tear shell, it is specifically written that don't shoot at the person directly. But what the police people were doing?
When you're using tear gas canisters,
they were shooting it directly to the normal protesters on the road.
So in Pakistan.
Yeah, they were. Especially on the 16 March, the last 16 March, when the Chief Justice was restored. But finally, eventually, the police people retreated because there were too much people over there. The masses gathered. So if you can, gather the masses, so there is a possibility that the violence will be finished, and you would be heard.
Umed Mansour, I want to try and bring in Jenny Williams here, who's in our studio in Liverpool. She's been working to try and achieve change for women in Zimbabwe. Jenny, I'm interested in this idea of whether violence does ever achieve the aims, because Umed Mansour was saying there that there was violence in the end involved in that protest in Pakistan. It did achieve a result. Jenny Williams, have you achieved anything with your peaceful protests?
We have grown a movement under a hugely repressive time of over 70,000 people. We have grown that movement because we are capable of mobilizing people, because we stand for telling the truth about what Robert Mugabe is doing to the country and telling the truth in a non-violent way. And I believe that the reason we have become such a huge movement is, number one, because we are non-violent, and because we conduct training exercises to 100% ensure that if our protesters come into the streets to demonstrate, that they observe complete non-violence principles. To that end, every time we have been in the street, it's not us who are violent, it is the police who are violent. And it's also an amazing thing to realize that in 2008, I spent 9 weeks in prison, having been denied bail by the police, who argued that because we are peacefully demonstrating, it is a form of violence, and during an election period, we shouldn't be allowed to do that. And so we were denied bail and put in prison.
Jenny,
but
thanks very much indeed.
But I think it's the control that is so important. If you're going to have an issue,
somebody was trying to get in the background there. Who was trying to speak there?
I was just saying that with the definition
of... Is that Umer Mansour?
Writer. Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was saying that that's where the definition of violence become important. You really have to see what is violence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that was the point I was making before.
And Professor Jonathan Farley, do come back in.
Yeah, so that was the point I was trying to make before. Comments like the joke that Professor Chris Knight made don't count as violence, whereas comments like I've received, I hope you are killed in the most violent, bloody way possible, sent to me directly, that is violent, and that's the kind of thing that the police should be investigating. Also, my comments about McDonald's, obviously I don't support breaking windows. I like a Big Mac as much as anyone else, in fact. But because some people break windows, that doesn't justify murdering people like Ian Tomlinson. So the police overreaction...
There is an investigation into that, we should say. Ian Tomlinson was the man who died of a heart attack after being pushed by police in London. But there is an investigation into that. Go ahead, Tariq Gafur wants to come back in.
So the police overreaction in that case, or 10 years ago there was a case of environmentalists in the United States who tied themselves to property inside a building, and the police pepper sprayed them at close range. To get them to leave. Of course, they couldn't leave because they were handcuffed together.
But that
does not justify torturing people or killing people, and that was the point I was trying to make.
Let's get Tariq Gafur to respond.
Violence can never be justified, but what we are proud of in UK is we have never used rubber bullets here. We don't use water cannons. We don't use tear gas, etc. And I think the whole thing needs to be put into the context in the way the protests are policed here, and that's notwithstanding the complexity that exists elsewhere. We police here with the consent and cooperation of the communities. The last thing we want to do is actually erode the confidence of the communities. But what that actually means is that the rule of law in terms of interpretation and our tactics that are subject to independent scrutiny are actually important in considering whether one thing is lawful or not. And frankly, when people resort to violence of any kind at all, they distort the objective in the first place, and they're not likely to then get the kind of change that they actually require.
We seem to be getting a consensus here. We're getting a lot of detail about how the police conduct these protests or how they control these protests. We're getting definitions of what is violence. But I think I'm hearing a consensus as well that, on the whole, most people seem to be agreeing at the moment that actually violence should be avoided and that your argument is more powerful if you keep it peaceful. I want to go now to the phones and speak to Chichon, who's in Bangkok. And that's where can we go to Chichon?
I'd like to come in as well if I can, yeah?
Let's hear from Chichon first, and I think that was Jenny Williams wanting to come back in. Let's hear from Chichon in Bangkok. And are you been taking part in the protest there, Chichon?
Yes. I believe the protest in democracy way should be peaceful without violence, because when we try to declare what the people ask for, the liberty, equality, and what we do is just follow all the law. So if there are any violence that against the law happen, that should not be the protest in democracy way.
So keeping it peaceful. And I think we've got another protester in Bangkok. Ekada, are you also determined to keep it peaceful?
Yes. I'm not part of the protest at all.
Who was that saying not part of the protest? That was Chichon. Okay.
That would be me.
Ekada was saying I'm not part of the protest. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I'm not part of the protest at all. I'm actually against it.
Okay, I see. So are you saying that you don't think there should be any protest, or just that where there is protest, it shouldn't be violent?
I agree with peaceful expression of your political view. Peaceful protest is very much at the core of democracy. The right to express yourself and your political view in public for the greater good of the public, basically. But rights come with responsibility, and I believe that both are at the very root of democracy, and without one, they cannot be the other. It is the way democracy is designed, and it is the only way democracy can be sustained.
So the only way democracy can be sustained is if protests remain peaceful. Jenny, I know you were waiting patiently to come back in there.
Yes, you know what has been crucial for us in our movement is we have a regime, we have a police force that has become so politicized. But because we are able to be non-violent, and because we have a very basic bread and butter issues.
Your issues of the role of women in Zimbabwe.
Exactly. Yeah. Education, school fees, the fact that you can't feed your children. Those are issues now when we are arrested in the police station. If you have been non-violent and the police officer himself buys into those issues, he's able to find space to calm down and bring out his human side and process you professionally. But if you are going to be violent and you are not going to have an issue that draws out the human side in a police officer, then you can have these sporadic attacks that we've seen.
Jenny makes some very, very important and compelling points there. And one of the things that is very true about the British police is that we are not political. And frankly, you know, the operational independence of a chief police officer is something that is valued. Because once you start to take sides, then the whole kind of mentality shifts. And then, of course, you know, that leads to excesses that, Jenny, you were talking about. And I think you really, really have made the crucial point, that is that, you know, you can protest peaceful and even against adversity, carry on doing it on basic issues. Well done. But you know what?
Thank you.
And who's that trying to come in there now?
Yeah, it's me, Umar. Yeah, I just like Umar, wondering.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wondering that Jenny was peaceful in her protest, but she ended up in the jail for like 1 or 2 weeks. She said, but you know that peaceful protest didn't make any difference. Then she was in the jail, and like she suffered for a while.
Yes, I suffered very much so, but I still have the moral high ground. My issue is
Absolutely.
Still an issue that I will be fighting for and continue to fight for. And the difference is, having spent 9 weeks in jail, last year. I will still manage to eventually go to trial, as I will on the 30th of April, and they will never manage to convict me because I have done nothing wrong. I've merely exercised my rights, my constitutional rights, to speak out peacefully. However, if I would have broken a window or beat up a police officer, they would be laying charges against me for assault. And where would my issue be?
And a reminder at this point...
Jenny, if you were being tortured by a policeman and you were just trying to self-defense yourself, then that's not called violence, is it? That's your right of self-defense as well. That's your constitution and your fundamental right as well.
Yes, but if you return violence and you are in an unfair system without a rule of law, you will find yourself arrested and taken to court and being charged. And in Zimbabwe right now, that is what would happen.
And Ms. Williams, I should say, though, just because you're in the right doesn't mean that they won't convict you. I wrote an essay where I suggested something along the lines of what Chris Knight did about people who owned slaves in the 19th century. And I had to flee the state I was living in the United States, and I haven't been back, and my belongings are still where I left them. So just because you're in the right doesn't mean that they can't come after you.
Injustices are performed at very many different levels, but you must remain active fighting against injustice.
Seeing it, but I agree to William. But what he said, that in Pakistan on 3rd November 2007, all of the lawyers, many of the lawyers, they were in the High Court building. They were not doing anything. They were not even part of the protest. But the police charged the High Court building, and they just tortured everybody and they dragged everybody to the jail. And many of the lawyers, in fact, 90% of the lawyers were in jail for like about 2.5 weeks under the, you know, the military regime, emergency rules. What they were doing, they were very peaceful, but they still, you know, ended up in the jail. So my point is that you have to raise a noise to let the people hear you when, you know, there are deaf ears all around.
And I agree with Mr. Mansour. It depends on the cause, but I myself would not just make a blanket statement saying that any kind of disturbance is completely unjustified. For example, we're celebrating the sesquicentennial of the raid at Harper's Ferry, where John Brown, the abolitionist, tried to start a slave insurrection in the American South. Obviously, in cases like that, that was necessary, and 140 years later, we're still fighting the same civil war, unfortunately. But in other cases, it would be totally unjustified. It really depends on the cause and on what you're actually doing.
Professor Jonathan Farley, Jenny Williams, Umar Mansour and Tariq Ghaffour here in the studio. We've all been debating today's question. You're listening to World Have Your Say, and the question is, if a protest turns violent, has the argument been lost? Michael, who claims to be a PhD student in Texas, I'm sure he is, he's listening on KUT. He says you and the media need to focus on the most sensational elements of the story, and in doing so, you nearly always miss the true story. By the way, I've had it with these kind of questions. I'm not listening to a show that continues to insult me in this way. World Have Your Say, indeed. Well, Michael, please, do keep listening. And next time you write in, why don't you call, or we'll call you back and we'll put you on the show and let's talk about this. It is your show, so join it. We've also got new people following us on Twitter, so thanks very much to all of you. Bargain Hosting, Sunil P, Ryan Goff, Go Vaporize, Jay Reed, Metaphor, everyone in London. Thanks very much for joining us here on the programme. I'm going to go to the phones again. We've got Dimitri in Greece. Dimitri, do you think that if a violent protest becomes violent, then basically that argument has been lost? The message is gone.
Not necessarily. You have to examine the reason why a demonstration has turned to a riot, and why do you actually have the violence? To my understanding, what I would say, you have like three types of demonstrators. Then you have the demos from democracy, the people demonstrating for their rights or if they think that something is going wrong. And then you might have like the usual suspects, like anarchists against the state or the establishment. And then you have something that you see very often in Greece, that you have the people that they simply want to cause havoc. The two last groups are not the same. There's a complete differentiation on those two.
Yes, that's an interesting point. Jenny, I think you were trying to get back in there, weren't you?
Yeah, I was just saying, you know, that the peaceful demonstration is peaceful, but there are very confrontational ways of being peaceful. There are very confrontational ways of forcing people to look and listen to your issue. But the bottom line is, if you are just going to do some sort of, commit some sort of violence or beat someone up or break windows, there will be other legal charges which will overshadow the issue that you are initially trying to raise.
Suren has joined us on the phone from Parliament Square here in London. Suren, what are you doing in Parliament Square?
Well, there is a big protest here. It's running to the third day. On the first day, it started at 12 o'clock and about 6 o'clock or 4 o'clock or something like that. People started running to the Bridge Street, which is adjacent to the British Parliament.
What are you protesting about, Suren?
Well, the Tamils are getting killed by the government of Sri Lanka. On Sunday, the government of Sri Lanka openly declared that they are going to go after the Tamils or the LTTE into the no-fire zone, which was declared by the Sri Lankan government as an area where neither party will fire. Although they've been indiscriminately bombing this no-fire zone unofficially, and they were denying all this time, on Sunday they said they're going to start bombing.
Suren, your protest has been pretty peaceful, hasn't it, for 3 days?
Well, we have been protesting for the last 12 months at least, with permission, every so often at the Parliament Square, because of the symbol of the Parliament Square is that traditionally this is the area where the British people have protested and demonstrated to make the point to the legislators, because
absolutely.
The Parliament Square is there just in front of the House of Lords and the House of Parliament.
So, Suren, we'll let you go back to making your point. I can hear the protest going there in the background. I want to bring in Daniel in Moldova. We mentioned Moldova earlier in the programme. There were big protests there, anti-government protests there, just a couple of days ago. Daniel, what do you think about violence in protesting?
Well, what do I say? Probably we are like 4 million in our country. I don't know the latest census. Maybe 4.5 million. Some of us left the country. But there are probably 3.6 million people still living in Moldova. And the election was, 2.5 million people have a right to vote, which means they are older than 18 years old. And I think pretty much every citizen of my country is against any violence at all. We are a very peaceful nation.
Okay, Daniel, thanks very much for that. Bart is listening on OPB. I think you're missing a vital point, says Bart. Protests are just one point on a sliding scale. It starts at activism, slides through protests, and ends at revolution. How far actions moves depends on how well governments listen to their people. Terry Gafford, you're chuckling.
Well, I think that's one extreme to another, and hope we never come to that in UK.
Umar Mansour, are you still with us? What do you think about that? Pakistan is a turbulent place at the moment.
Yeah, it is. Definitely it is right now. But you know what? What I have gathered over like last 2.5 years since I graduated, I have seen that the state machinery doing oppression against the people. People are frustrated over here. That's why they are being violent in the protest. But not every protest is being violent. You know, they were protesting all over Pakistan at the death of Benazir Bhutto. They were very violent. I've seen on the TV, though, the like 30 or 40 ATM machines were robbed by the protestants. But that was not fair. They even didn't know what they were protesting about. So you basically have to, you know, what do you call it? Like, you have to see the people who are really determined to the cause and the people who are just joined the cause for, you know, for their own illegal benefits.
It does feel as if emotion and frustration has a part to play in all of this, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I agree to it.
But can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can I ask you, does the public of Pakistan have sympathy and sympathy towards many, many hundreds of police officers who are being killed in terrorist acts in Pakistan? Do they have sympathy towards those officers?
Because they are not being killed in protest, I guess. They are being killed by the oppression of the government, or the state, you know, wrong movements of the government, I guess.
Umar Mansour, a lawyer in Pakistan, thanks very much for joining us on World Have Your Say. Thanks also to Jenny Williams from the Women of Zimbabwe Arise. Thanks too to Professor Jonathan Farley. Oh, by the way, when I was talking about the Twitterers, I forgot Axel. Axel Schulzer, I'm very sorry, you're very welcome too. Joining me here in the studio was Tariq Ghaffour, former Assistant Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. We were asking if protests turn violent, is the argument undermined? And I think most people have said, if preferably, we don't want the violence. Some people said sometimes it does come to that. That was the conversation. You can carry on, don't forget, on the blog. This was World Have Your Say. Thanks for listening.